Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are on Season 2, Episode 17, entitled Playing God. This episode aired February 27th, 1994. Before we start on this one, is there anything from the previous podcast you'd like to talk about? Anything about the holograms?
No, it was perfect.
It was very nice to have a B story back, but otherwise a relatively forgettable episode overall.
That's been most of season two.
I'm afraid so.
I guess this is why I don't have any strong memories of season two, because the majority of it seems to be, dare I say, filler.
Yeah. Yeah, each of these episodes, I mean, it's been a little bit up and down. Like, I think we quite liked the Armageddon episode, and we liked the one with Odo when he became the constable.
Yes.
But otherwise, yeah, it's a lot of forgettable stuff. Like, I even try to walk through in my head the titles, and I'm like, I can't remember half of them.
Yes, the Odo Noir episode was kind of fun.
Yeah, necessary evil. One thing about the last episode that was memorable was Kira's headband, but not memorable in a good way.
Her little exercise outfit did look like something from the 80s, though.
It really did. It was weird.
We had some discussions about that offline.
Yes. All right, well, shall we get started on Playing God?
Hey, I'm always into Playing God.
Yes, I'm sure you would be. In the cold open, my notes say, who are the dumb guys? Because we see two of them walking through the airlock into the station. But eventually I remembered they were the Pakleds.
Yes, we actually saw some Pakleds again.
They take on a whole new image since Lower Decks.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched that, you definitely should. I'm not going to spoil it for you.
It's worth a watch as a series.
Bashir comes in behind the Pakleds, walking with a Trill who's wearing the dullest of lavender outfits. It's long on the top with a V-neck collar and some gold stitching. Everything about this guy is boring. His clothes are boring. His voice is boring. His hair is boring. He's very boring.
Boring.
We learn that Dax is this guy's field docent, and he wasn't too thrilled about it. In fact, he'd asked for a reassignment. It seems that Dax is famous for breaking initiates, and over the past 200 years, he's personally eliminated 57 candidates from the program. Julian reassures him that Jadzia will be a good host. The dull guy gives us some info when he says 5,000 candidates qualify each year, but only 300 symbionts are available on average. They head to Quark's, where they find Dax beating all of the Ferengi at Tongo again. She does enjoy beating them, doesn't she? That's a concept I can relate to.
Beating them at their own game, the perfect thing to do for Ferengi.
Yes. Bashir introduces Arjun, that's the dull guy's name, to Jadzia, and we learn she wasn't expecting him until tomorrow. Dax wants to teach Arjun Tongo, and Quark kicks Rom away from the table, giving Arjun his seat, but Arjun is tired. But Arjun is tired, so Jadzia says she'll take him to his quarters.
Rom just gets the short end of the stick every time, doesn't he?
Always. The Ferengi are annoyed that she's leaving when she's winning. She says, they're sore losers, as she leaves. Having left all the money behind, by the way, so whatever she won, she left it on the table.
Yeah, I wouldn't leave anything behind for the Ferengi.
I would not either. And we cue the theme song.
So did we learn in that Dax was the one actually rejecting candidates? I thought it was Curzon.
Well, it couldn't have just been Curzon since it was over 200 years.
Yeah. Okay. So the actual symbiont itself is making a decision or making part of the decision of who will the next host will be. A very conscious part of that decision.
I guess it's just because Dax is part of the host all the time when these things happen.
I don't
know.
Well, yes, that's true. As the symbiont, yes.
The next morning, Arjun, in his boring outfit, arrives at Dax's quarters to find some weird alien with very muscular arms answering the door. He says Jadzia is in the shower, which makes Arjun uncomfortable. Then Dax comes out in a towel, of course, and she tells Arjun they need to work on his bad habit of being early. She also says it takes her longer to get ready now that she's a female. Great.
Hey, you gotta put in that little gender dig.
I would hope if we're really evolving as we're supposed to over the course of all the years between now and Star Trek time, that we're also evolving out of the need for women to think they have to make themselves up differently from everyone else. I don't know. It was uncalled for.
Well, remember, she's a Trill, so maybe Trill stick to those social norms and the humans don't.
Uh-huh. Written by humans. Sorry. Who are stuck in a particular way. I won't shout the patriarchy, don't worry. Turns out she is learning some kind of wrestling from the muscular alien dude who just left. She says it's a great way to start the day. Once she finally gets dressed and starts talking to Arjun, she refers to herself in the third person. I don't know if you caught this, but no. She says Jadzia went through field training years ago. She tells Arjun to call her Jadzia instead of ma'am or lieutenant. And then she says she hates to be too appropriate, which fits her very well when we remember all of her inappropriate comments over the last season and a half.
Yes, lots of them.
Now we go to ops, and Kira and Miles are searching behind panels and in the little conduits or vents or whatever those openings are behind all the panels.
Yeah.
They're looking for Cardassian voles who are spreading throughout the station like a rat infestation. They make a point of showing some stuff that the voles have chewed through, like they've eaten through some wires. And Sisko says, Phaser's on stun. He wants them taken alive.
He seems to be rather amused by this whole mole hunt. Or vole hunt, actually.
Yeah. He's amused by it for a while. Jadzia brings Arjun into ops and introduces him to Sisko and also to the butts of Kira and Miles, who are looking for voles, and their butts are just sticking up in the air. Jadzia is excited to see a vole and takes Kira's place in the tube because she says she's not seen one. Sisko says, oh, you picked the black marble to Arjun, meaning he got stuck with Dax. Curzon's reputation of being a jerk must be far-reaching.
Yes.
Then they manage to stun one of the vole, which Jadzia pulls out of the conduit and hands to Arjun. And it looks like a skinny, scruffy possum, which is pretty gross.
With an extra set of legs.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. It had six legs?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that thing was pretty ugly. Next, we go to Dax and Arjun in a runabout going through the wormhole. Dax does seem puzzled by how boring this dude is. I don't know. That was the note that I took. I don't know why.
I think that seems to be the point with this character. He's just very bland.
Yeah. She refers to herself in the third person again in the scene, telling him that she remembers how hard it was being Curzon's initiate and that Arjun doesn't have to impress her. She's not going to make it hard on him. He asks how she impressed Curzon, and she said she didn't. He recommended her initiate period be terminated.
Oh.
Then the runabout is hit by a subspace interface pocket, and they have to shut down engines. The computer tells them they've lost the starboard nacelle. Somehow, they're able to see an outside shot of the nacelle, which is interesting. Like, they have cameras out in space or something, or they have detachable cameras from the runabout.
Yeah, they just lean to the edge of the view screen.
Something has attached itself to the nacelle, some kind of, like, blue lights, it looked like. I couldn't really tell if the lights were the thing that attached or if it was the lights from the nacelle and that it was the blob that had attached. I don't know. That visual was hard to see.
Yeah, it looked like they just picked up some gum on the nacelle. Space gum, definitely.
Space gum.
Yeah.
The computer doesn't know what it is. That's the analysis. And we go to an ad break. Back on the station, Kira and Miles are still chasing voles. As they're talking about ways to eliminate them, Quark comes in carrying one of these gross creatures.
That little plastic prop is getting so much work this episode.
It really is.
Yeah. Whoever made that prop must be very proud.
I have to point out again that we just let anybody wander into ops, which is crazy.
With a dead vole, that's potentially a biohazard.
Right. With a rat. Kira asks, how did it die? Did it get into your food? Quark says, as landlords, you're responsible for vermin control. When Kira says she'd take a vole over Quark any day and stomps off, Quark says, oh, she's fighting a latent attraction to me, which is so revolting. And yet again, like always, no one stands up for the women. They just allow that crap to be spoken in her place of work. It's very offensive.
Well, they didn't have HR.
I would be so horrified if my coworkers just let that kind of stuff go on. I mean, I have been in many environments where I was the only woman working. That's what happens when you go into software. It's not so true now, but it certainly was back when I started. I would just have been horrified if nobody ever stood up for me or looked out for me in any way. And that's even before all the laws were as well enforced as they are now.
Yeah.
But I just find this kind of stuff upsetting.
Well, I think some of it is how the writers would like to behave.
Oh, that's really worse. When Miles shows Quark his plan to play a sound to hurt the ears of the voles and drive them out, it makes Quark scream and drop to the floor.
Yeah, you'd think he would put two and two together at something that has a high sonic frequency or output power
Yeah.
might affect the guy with giant ears.
Yeah, maybe that was the point. Let's do more of that. Let's clear out all the vermin, including the Ferengi vermin.
It seemed like Miles was actually not thinking about it.
No, he was surprised. Yeah, he had no idea. And Kira just stood behind going, oh, look at that.
Yeah, I expect you'll be asking Miles for a couple of those. Can I get a few of those? Can I get like a six pack of them?
Right. Then Dax and the dull guy come back through the wormhole saying they picked up some kind of subspace seaweed and couldn't get rid of it. So you called it gum, she called it seaweed.
I'm still going with gum.
They tow them in, and Dax asks for a containment field to study the thing, whatever it is. So sure, let's bring the unknown thing onto the station.
Happened last time they did that?
I'm surprised they didn't just beam it right to ops. Let's just beam it right in here, have a look at it.
Yeah, let's put it in a lab and close the door and forget about it. We'll look at it tomorrow.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Oh, you know what? We'll put like a glass cloche over it.
Yes.
It'll be fine.
And make sure all the vents are open.
Oh my God. There are some themes this season especially. Oh my God. Next, Dax and Arjun stop by the Klingon Panda Express, and the big Klingon chef is singing again.
This guy is just great.
And now he's got a little accordion.
Yes.
Or I guess it's not an accordion when it's that. It's a concertina.
Yeah.
And Jadzia starts singing with him. And the Klingon tells Arjun that Jadzia taught him that song. Arjun is not impressed, of course, because he's a total dud. And he's also totally grossed out by the Klingon food.
Oh, yes. Eating racked. It's the point where he says, I didn't move it. It moved itself.
Yeah, it was funny. This reminded me so much of when I took my mom and her sister to the Pacific Northwest, and every single thing that got served to them, they just looked at it like, this food is weird. The food here is so weird. They had the same looks on their faces as Arjun as they pushed the food around on their plates.
Oh, that's classic.
Anyway, that's a story for another day.
Yeah. I do like the Klingon with the accordion. I have the feeling this guy, as Klingons go, must be quite a cosmopolitan one. He must be a Klingon hipster.
Yeah, he's pretty hip for sure. In this scene, we learn that Arjun's father sponsored him for the program. He was a pilot instructor, but he died recently. His sister had been accepted into the program first, but decided to get married instead, which upset the father. So he put all of his hopes of adjoining in his dud of a son, and his last words to him were, I'm counting on you.
So the father's living vicariously through the son.
Yeah, well, he's not even living anymore.
Oh, yeah. He's now dead. He's dead vicariously through the son. So this is all really just family pressure for this guy to become a host.
Yes. Jadzia sees that he doesn't seem committed to this path on his own, and she tells him that he has to have some of his own convictions, otherwise the symbiont will overwhelm his personality.
Ah, we actually get some real depth into this, which is, you've talked about this before, of how much the symbiont brings versus the original personality. So now we actually get a definitive answer, which is the symbiont will affect the host. And if you don't have a strong enough personality, it will overwhelm it. This, I thought, was very interesting.
It was. And you could see that Arjun was really uncomfortable with that.
Yeah.
Like, he was waiting for the symbiont to kind of tell him what he wanted to be when he grew up, but that's just not the way that it works.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, it was like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a contrast to Varad as well. Varad had that sort of odd kind of weak personality, it seemed, didn't you think?
Yeah.
But at the same time, had a real conviction of why he wanted this host, because they shared common interests.
But we don't know, I think we've talked about this before, but we don't know what would have happened in the long run, because he only had Dax for a short time. This is from the episode called Invasive Procedures.
Yeah, yeah.
Earlier this season, which I think is episode 4.
Which was quite a good one.
Yeah, it was okay.
Well, it was great the way you saw how a symbiont would affect the host after the joining.
Yeah, that's true. At least in the short term.
Yeah.
Well, now Miles is on the space phone with a Cardassian, and he's asking how to get rid of the voles. But of course, the dude is not helpful, because he's a Cardassian.
Yes.
He even tells Miles that their mating season begins in about 6 weeks. And Miles eventually hangs up on the guy when Dax comes in with a box for Miles, and it turns out to be a present from Bashir, and it's a flute with a note that says, it worked in Hamlin.
Ba-dum-ba.
Which is very cute.
Yeah. I did like how the Cardassian managed to get a dig in at the end. You could always withdraw from Bajor.
Yeah, that was right when Miles hung up. That was actually pretty funny.
Yeah. Don't miss an opportunity to have a dig at the Federation.
Yep.
I suddenly had a thought. why doesn't Kira call back Bajor and Yanni to get rid of the Vols?
You know, they said, I don't remember if it was in this scene or if it was earlier, but they said that they seem to have been moving or migrating in the station because of more use of the different areas of the station. But maybe it's really because when Bajor and Yanni was on board, they all started coming to his music. So maybe that's already happened. He should have kept playing his way onto a shuttle or something, or into a cargo bay. So they could have just vented them all into
vented
space.
Them.
Oh, that is gross and nasty. Dax enters Sisko's office where they sit down at a chess table. He says her seaweed has been transported to the science lab. Then Sisko asks about her initiate, and she says he's fine, but she doesn't know what he'd bring to a symbiont. He seems to be riding his father's ambitions and not his own. Sisko asks if she's confronted him about this, and she says that's not her job. Sisko says Curzon was tough, maybe even abusive, in his own charming way. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. But he always demanded the highest standards in the candidates. Dax says she made it through the program no thanks to him, and Sisko says, are you sure about that? This is really uncool. I found this scene really upsetting.
You're not the only one. I thought there was a good leadership part here from Sisko, though, of Jadzia was avoiding having the difficult conversation, quite clearly.
Yeah.
And Sisko was pointing out to her she needed to have that difficult conversation, that it needed to happen. But at the same time, I think this scene also points out that Curzon is an absolute unbelievable hypocrite. Curzon, abusive in his own charming way? No. There's no abusive and charming.
There's no abusive and charming.
There's just abusive and an a-hole.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah, I did find it a little bit frustrating that Sisko painted that picture that way, that, it was charming. That he abused you. And then also the way that he said, you know, are you sure that you didn't make it through because of his abuse? And it's just like, that's the wrong way to approach that. That as the leader in that situation, that's the wrong way to approach that.
Well, what's funny is that's a contrast from Sisko. You don't see Sisko being abusive to his subordinates or his son or anything like that.
Right.
I find Curzon comes out so badly from this. I'm putting him down as a galaxy-class hypocrite at this point.
Yeah, he comes out badly, but...
Yeah, I mean, so let's have a look at this.
This is not a good look for Sisko in this situation either. That's bad management. You just can't tell people stuff like that.
So you're telling me that the guy who's making a choice for the best candidates is, in summary, an abusive, womanizing drunk who even cheats on the wife of one of his friends, one of his good friends, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And that good friend was also a traitorous general, so he can't even pick good characters. I have this image now of Curzon, and I don't remember this mostly because I probably put it out of my mind from original watching.
Right.
That Curzon really is an incredibly negative character and is somebody who really shouldn't have even been a Trill host because he has all these negative instances, and you look at it and say he's holding people up to a standard he could never reach. And I just laugh because even now we have the gambling. He likes to gamble with the Frangies. So it's like he's this amazing anti-character, I would say. And then Sisko says things about that. Oh, he taught him about music and culture and all these other things. And I'm like, did he really?
We never see that version.
Yeah. I think my personal opinion is he just took Sisko to lots of bars, got him drunk. Various dive planets around the place, and Sisko was too drunk to realize.
Well, not even that. I mean, maybe he did just take him to a lot of places where he could drink and chase women. I'm pretty sure they say that exact phrase somewhere in the show. But Sisko just was there, so, you know, was he just learning other things while that was going on? Was that really something that Curzon taught him? Look, a person who is a bit of a pig is still a pig, even if they love Mozart. Or even if they can play Mozart on the piano, the pig is still the pig.
Yeah.
So I just, as a person who's dealt with my own share of toxic people, I just find that sort of stuff really awful. And the kind of thing that, again, if I am a leader of people, I have to be more supportive of their growth and not just say, you know what, if that guy just beat on this person more, you know, he or she would be more successful. It's like, no, man, that's just... ugh, it's gross. This kind of stuff, you know, when it comes to influencing people and trying to get the most out of people,
yeah,
this is the thing that probably impacts me even more than the crappy way that they treat women. It's just, it's such a mistake because you're not, you need to be building a community around you in order to get the most out of teams. And that kind of thing is so anti-community, you know, it really grates on me.
Well, it kind of fits for Curzon, who seems to be completely in it for himself.
Yeah. Curzon and I would not have gotten along.
I don't think anybody would get along with Curzon.
Sisko's best buddy. So awful. We don't have any episodes where we flashback on Curzon, do we?
Offhand, I do not remember.
I'd look forward to. Oh, I really hope not. Okay, moving on.
One final beating up on Curzon point.
Yeah.
Jadzia really didn't seem to like him, which makes it very strange that she would join with Dax and have all of Curzon's memories.
Yeah. So really, she should be able to remember why he did that. She should have the memory of the why.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a missed opportunity for a little analysis. But
yeah, exactly.
You're not really great at the deep analysis on the show.
That's the truth.
They don't spend a lot of time doing it. Meanwhile, down in the science lab, a Vol puppet, because that's what it looked like, somehow chews through the containment field or something.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
And the seaweed, this whole scene was so weird because it seemed like it kind of exploded, but really it was just this bright light.
Yeah.
And I don't even know.
What happened was the Vol is like sniffing around the containment field.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the field like disables and the room glows white.
It entered the secret code of 1234.
As we've seen before in the episodes, there's just one big button that has like disable the field and the Vol just, you know, walked on
it. Yes, like the one that turned off the gravity.
Yeah. Oh, we don't find what happened to the Vol puppet though.
No, we never see that particular one again.
Yeah. Of course, nobody's watching and there are no alarms.
Well, no, we never watch stuff like this. After the ad break, Sisko is holding Chief O'Brien's toolbox as he climbs around. I thought that was really cute that he was standing there holding his toolbox.
Yes.
Sisko is worried about any potential threat from the seaweed, but nobody really knows anything.
He seems very annoyed by the Vols, though.
Yes, Sisko says take the phasers off stun when shooting the Vols.
I hate to tell him, but isn't this where you should start with rats?
Start with kill?
Yes.
Definitely. Dax asks Arjun to do some science stuff in trying to figure out what the seaweed is. Arjun then tries to convince Jadzia that he's not the dullest person on the planet with no goals or interests, but she's not impressed. As they work, she says she's worried that he's not preparing himself for being joined. Then he gets super defensive and says he's never seen any host farther below the joining standards than her. No wonder Curzon Dask tried to terminate her training. Then he stomps out, and she just kind of sighs.
Jadzia Dax is at least smart enough to know, or experienced enough to know, that was what was going on. That he's going through the motions, as it were, and just giving the correct answers. I mean, he does give every impression that he's just a guy who, I'm going to say exactly what you want to hear me tell you.
Right. Well, when she was trying to get interest out of him, he didn't really have any. I mean, he just had nothing to say about himself or his own ideas or ambitions. He had nothing. He had no answers. And then in this scene, he was trying to say, I was just kidding. Ha ha. I have all these great ambitions. And she's like, I don't think so.
Well, so maybe a little bit early overanalysis, but from everything I've seen here, I would worry that the selection process is really suited towards those who can game the system and give like a correct image of what they're looking for. So if you present this false image or this fake view and the right answers, this you'd be rewarded with, isn't that a great candidate? They're perfect.
Well, that might have been part of the excuse why Curzon was hard on people. Like, he was really trying to draw out who they were.
Yeah.
But of course, you could also do that by being, I don't know, open and nice to someone and having a conversation. And I think that's kind of what Dax was doing, right? She was just trying to have a conversation. And in the conversation, she noticed this about him, that he was just so lacking in ambition.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess if your goal, like if you were Varad, and your goal was to trick the person into believing you are a particular way, you could maybe put on some kind of a face. But they also do all these other rigorous tests. I mean, that stuff's going to come out somewhere if you're really lying. To me, that's why they do all these different tests and why they send them out on this program to be with the other Trills.
Right. Okay.
They're digging deep.
Yes. Yeah. I suppose you would probably need to, but it all seems a little fake to me. like they're looking for people to live up to what they expect as a standard that might not actually be the people.
Well,
I mean, clearly Curzon managed to completely fool it. I mean, how low a standard do you need for him?
Right. Well, but that kind of hypocrisy has existed for all of eternity.
With humans.
With humans. So why wouldn't it exist there as well?
Okay. That's kind of a good point.
I mean, how many times do you have someone who is like a so-called religious leader that gets into some kind of moral trouble or ethical trouble?
Oh, well, they can be forgiven.
But my point is that sort of holier-than-thou thing has existed here forever, and I'm not surprised to see it in the Trill process. That's what would happen here.
Right. Maybe the Trill have the same failings as humans.
Right. Or different ones, but still they have them.
Yeah.
If they thought Curzon was the right...
Oh, I've just realized, maybe the Trill don't see those things as failings. Maybe they see them as actual real positive things. Oh, this guy's great. He drinks, he's gambles.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. If Curzon had a really strong personality, even if it was a crappy one, he wouldn't have been overwhelmed by the symbiont.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe there's some benefit to being a jerk.
He's abusive. He's awful. Oh, man, this is the best candidate we've had.
This guy will be great.
So maybe we're looking at the wrong way, that the things that a lot of people would consider negative are actually real positives in Trill society. Jadzia is this kind of pleasant character, is actually the outlier that they're all looking at going, ugh, she's so nice.
Now we go to Ops, and they are discussing the seaweed. Dax says it is rapidly expanding and it grows in spurts, which was probably what was happening when we had that burst of light earlier when the vole puppet was biting it.
Yep.
She says the computer recognized its growth patterns as the expansion patterns of a universe. It's a proto-universe in its earliest stages of formation. It's threatening to replace their universe with itself, and moving it would also be extremely dangerous. If they contain it long enough, it might implode back on itself and go away. They have a couple of hours to build the containment field.
I think they should just throw it back in the wormhole and make it the Prophet's problem. Put in a shuttle, shoot it into the wormhole, Prophet's problem.
I was thinking, how can they make it explode on itself with all the voles in there too? But then I thought, what if what happened was then it just created like an entire universe of voles?
The vole universe.
Yeah, that would maybe be bad. Sounds like some kind of a Disney cartoon.
Yes.
In Quark's, Arjun is drinking to forget. Quark tries to convince him to forget his troubles in a holosuite. He disparages Dax, saying now his life is ruined, and overall he's being very whiny. Then Quark tells a story about being an apprentice to a subnegus when it all went wrong. And Arjun asks what happened, and Quark says, rule of acquisition 112, never have sex with the boss's sister. He says you only get one shot at the Latinum stairway, and if you miss it, you miss it. Welcome to the club, son. That's his advice. He's like, thanks. That's great.
I have a suggestion here.
Mm-hmm.
New rule of acquisition. Rule number 499. Never take advice from Quark.
Yeah, that's legit. It is funny because he kind of builds you up like he's going to give advice. And then he just pretty much says, well, you blew it. Get over it.
That was a funny scene. That worked.
It was.
That worked perfectly for Quark. I think it also points out another piece of Quark, which he is really bad at strategic plans. Oh, actually, and even tactical plans. Once again, we see Quark failing by his own hand.
We don't have a lot of evidence that the Ferengi are good at any kind of plans that doesn't have to do with immediate profit.
Yeah.
Back in the science lab, some NPCs are doing something. I don't know, something sciencey. Dax keeps doing her own science stuff on the seaweed, scanning it in a million different ways.
Oh, we are having some extreme technobabble at this point.
We really are, and I didn't even write it down because it was too much.
I am impressed that she managed to read all those lines with a straight face. It was so much of it.
She gets a lot of them. Well, I guess because she's the science officer.
Yeah.
But something in the readings worries her, and she jumps up. Then we go to Ops, and Miles is ready to turn on the containment field so that they can do that thing where it implodes on itself. But Dax arrives saying she's found indications of life in the proto-universe. Dun, dun, dun. And we go to an ad break.
See my earlier comment of just throw it in the wormhole and make it the Prophet's problem.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Now we're just looking at spinning green lights on a screen. That means nothing, but we pretend like it's giving us tons of information. Kira wonders how it's possible that the life is intelligent, but they say they don't know how long that life has been evolving. Miles calls to say we've only got a couple of minutes before the next expansion. Sisko can't make up his mind what to do, so he clears out the science lab as they await the next expansion. He's not prepared to destroy it yet.
Kira's ready to shoot it.
Kira is really irked by this, but she follows orders to clear out space for the thing to expand. And then the next expansion blows a couple of holes out of the station, which we see from the outside. So that was a big one.
Yes.
Dax says the next expansion will be 300%, and by tomorrow the entire station will be gone. This seems very bad. It's always something with these foreign objects that they bring onto the station or onto the ship. It keeps expanding.
Yep.
Kira says, it's us or them. We have to destroy it. But the others don't want to wipe out an entire civilization. It's like stepping on ants, Odo, Kira says. But Odo says he doesn't step on ants, which is a neat trick if you're walking on the ground on a planet. You're likely stepping on something.
Yeah, I'm guessing Odo's going to be pretty useless then when it comes to getting rid of the Vols.
That's an excellent point.
Maybe Odo is actually encouraging the Vols. He has like a whole little Vol set up because he likes them.
He keeps them as pets.
Yeah, I do like how Kira's ready just to shoot the thing.
Well, she asks if anyone has a better idea, and Sisko says he'll decide in an hour.
This is very serious Sisko face now. He has an hour to make a decision. He has totally gone into that serious Sisko mode.
Well, I think they're really showing here the difference here in Starfleet's view on expanding and exploring versus Kira's survival instincts.
Yeah, I think this would make sense because Kira has come from a background of just staying alive and fighting the Cardassians and everything that entailed.
Exactly.
So she has a lot more, I think, of a survival instinct maybe than the Federation do.
Right.
I mean, the Federation has a lot of red shirts in it.
Yeah, and she's been in the us versus them mentality her whole life.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's never really had the luxury, I would think, of exploration or, let's see what it does. Because often I expect that let's see what it does is kill you.
Right. Sisko now goes into a personal log while walking through the station. He says he has an hour to decide to wipe out an entire new civilization or allow the death of his own.
Wow, that's a big jump there, though. I mean, it could just be microbes.
Yeah, I think this is really a jump. I mean, you're going to kill billions to save this universe, which might not have intelligent life. You don't really know. It didn't seem like that hard of a choice to me. It was weird. Although he does say the thing about comparing it to the indifference of the Borg as they exterminated everyone, you know, without really caring about them.
I think they missed an opportunity to really make this sort of strike home, as it were, if Dax had come out with something like, I picked up a warp signature in the bubble. So then there'd be no question that whatever life was in there was intelligent and that there was some kind of civilization. And then you would have a, how do you not know it's microbes? There's something alive in there.
Right.
I guess they're aiming for a dilemma of, is this life intelligent or not? But,
Well, I think this thing he says about the Borg, I feel like that was the point they were trying to make, but they didn't make it very well. They just made it in that one little scene.
Yeah.
Because I was with Kira. I'm like, I don't get it. You don't really have any evidence that there's any kind of intelligence going on there. And if I have to save myself or this thing that I don't know if is real, I'm going to probably save myself.
Right.
I was with Kira.
Plus, the Borg don't actually exterminate. They just add your biological and technological distinctiveness to their own.
Right.
And by assimilating other beings into their collective, they're just bringing them closer to perfection.
Uh-huh.
They're so misunderstood.
Yeah, they definitely are.
I've been reading some Borg literature.
You've been reading the pamphlets?
Yes.
Well, then Sisko goes to see Jake, who tells him that he's in love with a Dabo woman, which really upsets Sisko at first, but eventually he thinks it's cute and says Jake can invite her to dinner sometime soon. That was bizarre.
Did you notice how she said she wanted to be called a woman?
Uh-huh.
Which is in line with your earlier statements where you said, I'm not calling them girls anymore.
Yeah, they're too old.
I did like that. That actually made me laugh. I'm like, hey.
Hey, somehow they listened to us.
As scenes go, though, this was a pretty funny jump. We went from the philosophical brooding Sisko with a serious decision to make to, you're in love with a Dabo woman?
Yeah, I'm sure they did that on purpose, right? Because he's trying to make some very difficult decisions. And then he goes in and is like, oh, yeah, Jake. I don't want to hurt Jake. He's too perfect.
Yes.
Dax finds Arjun staring into a blue drink still in Quark's. Dax starts talking about Jedzie in the third person again, saying she was the quietest, shyest, withdrawn woman before she was joined. She tells the story about how she was sailing through her training until she met Curzon Dax, who made her cry herself to sleep every night and doubt herself. She reapplied for the program after the incident and managed to find her own voice. Then, when she found out Curzon was dying, she requested the Dax symbiont. She says Jedzia Dax is not Curzon Dax, but she's slowly coming to terms with that. She tells him to find his own reasons for joining and not rely on what others want.
Interesting. Dax also says to Arjun that Curzon could have drunk 18 of those, hit on every Darbo woman in the place, spent the evening at the tables, and booked 3 hollow suites.
Yeah. Sisko comes in saying he wants to take the proto-universe back through the wormhole. Dax says they'll have to work to block out any Verderon node radiation while in the wormhole, and she tells Arjun that she needs a pilot. We learned earlier that he's a level 5 pilot while Dax is only a level 3. I forgot that little detail earlier, but that is the reason why she asks him now to be the pilot.
I thought we had a whole explanation not 10 minutes ago about why they couldn't take it back through the wormhole.
Well, yes, we did, but it was about this Verderon stuff. And I think Sisko just decided to accept that risk because leaving it where it was a higher risk. That's the way I read it.
Oh, okay.
Now Dax and Arjun are in a runabout, and O'Brien beams the proto-universe and the containment field into the back of the runabout, and off they go with a mini-universe on board.
If you notice the outside shot of the station, there are now 2 holes in the side of it.
Yeah, 2 holes, yeah.
Getting worse. Miles is going to have to fix all of that, you know.
Definitely. Well, he likes fixing things. He's fine. As they go into the wormhole, Kira says, "May the prophets guide you."
Which is interesting because if they're dumping this wormhole into the realm of the prophets in the wormhole and it explodes or whatever, wouldn't that be very bad for the prophets?
But the prophets see everything at once, so they would have already known that it happened.
Oh.
And maybe they adjusted things so that it didn't happen.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Kind of like Dr. Manhattan.
Kind of. Once in the wormhole, the containment... Oh, that was my shoulder that just clicked and made that big noise. Once in the wormhole, the containment field starts to decrease so quickly that they have to stop. Dax says they're going to have to let the containment field collapse and manually fly through the wormhole, avoiding the Verderon nodes so that the proto-universe doesn't expand on them. She tells Arjun he can do it because he's a good pilot, though he is very dubious of this plan. But, of course, they fly their way out. And she says, this will look very good on his initiate record. And then she says, let's get this thing back where it belongs. And they show the shuttle turning around. So I guess they beamed it back where they found it.
But now this I found very confusing. Because why did they fly through the wormhole and then fly back? It didn't seem to make a lot of sense. If they're in the wormhole, why didn't they just beam it out?
While they were in the wormhole?
Yeah. If they then fly through it and then fly back through it again. I didn't think the wormhole was directional. Well, maybe it is directional.
What do you mean?
Because if you're flying through the wormhole in one direction, why not just beam the thing out if they want to put it back in the wormhole? Why did they have to fly through the wormhole?
They didn't pick it up in the wormhole.
I thought they picked it up in the wormhole.
No.
They were in the wormhole.
They picked it up on the other side of the wormhole.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm. I am confident.
So they have to find that pocket of subspace and stuff the thing back in it.
Well, I guess I don't know exactly what subspace means, but... Yeah, they can't just drop it off on the other side of the wormhole because, one, it eventually expand and take over that quadrant.
Yeah, that's exactly the problem. So
the whole thing was so hand-wavy.
Right.
So if it was in a subspace, what was it? Interphasic pocket?
Yeah.
That means that it was part of the multiverse? What the hell does that mean?
It was somewhere outside of normal space.
So how were they going to get it there?
Well, I assume just... go to warp and throw it out. that's my plan. I don't think it's any worse than this.
Okay. This is a terrible plan. And we have just hand-waved our way right through it.
Well, based on some of the previous plans we've had before, it would be completely valid for them to go through the wormhole, just throw it out, and then come back and go, it won't affect us, it'll be fine.
Everything's fine.
Yes.
Well, back on the station, Arjun is leaving, and he apologizes for being rude to Jedzia, but she says that was the first time he was actually honest with her. He thought joining would make any trill complete and serene. and she's nothing like he expected. And Jadzia agrees, saying, I'm nothing like I expected. Then she tells him that life after life, with each new personality stampeding around in your head, you get desires that scare you, dreams that used to belong to someone else. I wouldn't recommend it for everyone. In time, I might recommend it for you. He says, I know what I have to do, and he leaves. The last thing she says after he's gone is, I'm not Curzon. It was so weird.
I did like that. I think part of this whole episode is the fact that she's trying not to be Curzon, that she recognizes the flaws that are actually within the Trill memories.
See, I'm not Curzon.
Yes, precisely.
I didn't make him cry again. Well, I mean, she kind of did, but...
Part of the Trill thing, I think, is the idea of evolving. As the symbiont evolves over time and you get smarter and better. And
yeah.
I think maybe that was what was going on here, of she saying she's not Curzon. So all those flaws, if you like, the really negative flaws that he had, she isn't perpetuating.
Right.
So it is an evolution in that respect.
Right. I see. For her.
Yes. And for the symbiont, Dax.
That's true. That's a good point. Well, that was the end, abruptly.
Yes.
Do you have any other overanalysis?
First of all, I think that clearly there is an unrealistic expectation for the joining process, that it might have been brought up on Trill that everybody wants to do it, or a large number of people want to do it, and clearly some people don't have the right attitude towards what it is.
Right.
And I could see that as being shocking for the people involved. I would think that there'd be a lot of messed up people dropping out of the program. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It would have quite a negative effect on people who either failed or got to the point of looking at it and going, what on earth do I want to do this for?
Well, Arjun seemed like he was looking at the joining as an end point.
Yeah.
Like something to get to, and then everything was fine. And Jadzia was trying to tell him that's not at all the case. It's really more like the beginning of something. And if you're not ready, it's going to make you nuts.
It's funny because Varad seemed to actually have a better take on it than Arjun.
Yes. He was looking for it as a way to better himself.
Yeah. And not only better himself, but also to bring improvement to the symbiont as well.
Right.
Because they had shared interests.
That's true.
He was very smart. So I could see that as being almost corrosive in some ways to Trill society.
Yeah.
And I've talked about, do you end up in Trill society with this highly stratified golden section of society who are the joined and the people who will be joined and all the other peasants, as it were?
I would think it would be a thing that would be quite scary.
Yeah.
Because you're going to turn into something else, and you have to wonder if you're going to be eclipsed by this other thing that's joining with you, and then you'll be gone.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, they don't really talk about it in that way, but there's got to be some fear.
Right. Well, that's where that's kind of what I was trying to say a minute ago, which was, some people get to this point and go, so I lose everything that I'm going to be?
Yeah.
Or I have the potential for that, which is, you know, what you're saying.
Right.
Wouldn't they drop out and go, I'm not doing this. I like being me.
His sister did, right? She decided, I'm going to get married.
Yeah.
Forget it. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
Probably because she too is being pushed to it by the father.
Right.
I guess what we learned is that this isn't the goal of every single Trill.
Yeah. Which would probably seem healthy.
But we don't see a lot of people who it's not their goal.
Right. Also, you notice we didn't cover, this is another bit of analysis.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't cover how Curzon got through the program or how he was selected.
No, we didn't. And she would know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Curzon, in that case, and I honestly, I don't remember, and I don't want to look this up, if Curzon became joined because of an accident or because of an emergency. And we know that Trill symbionts can be transferred to other Trill if they're going to die and it's an emergency. And there's no other opportunity. Yeah. So maybe he was just like a dude. So that's, I don't know if we find that out. And I wouldn't tell you if I remembered anyway, because I don't want to give you spoilers.
That's a good example. It's like, I'd love to go look that up, but if it's something that's going to come up later, I don't want to spoil it.
Right. And there is more about Dax in the future. So I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Okay. Any other overanalysis?
No, that really wraps it up. I mean, I talked about I mean, I say talked. I ranted about what I thought an awful person Curzon was earlier, so that sums it up for me.
Yes, and we talked about what happened to the proto-universe. We already covered that. And I think we just managed to destroy the whole Gamma Quadrant.
Yep.
But no big deal.
It'll be years before it becomes a problem.
Jeez. Well, if we move to women in the future, the only thing I really have to say is this notion that abuse is the way to get the most out of people is so troubling. We already covered it, so I don't need to beat that horse again, but
yeah,
there are just better ways, and I didn't like that. Oh, yeah, and also, I guess there were two things. I said one, but I guess there are two, because I also didn't like Miles not standing up for Kira when Quark made a lewd comment in Ops. I mean, right in the middle of Ops. It's not like it was Quark's or, you know, I don't know, the promenade. It was Ops. It was where she works. Stand up for her. Don't allow that stuff in there. It's annoying.
Quark, do you want another blast of the ultrasonic?
Maybe that was his way of dealing with it.
Oh.
He started blasting out his ears.
Yeah.
Well, he should do that more.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then let's go to rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating?
I'm going with thumbs down on this. I thought this was just a bad episode.
Yeah.
I thought, although it had potentially a lot of interesting material, I thought Sisko completely failed to show proper leadership, even though he did start addressing how Dax should have a difficult conversation.
Yes.
It had its high points, and there were some good pieces in it, and I see what some of the things they were trying to do, like Jadzia asserting her own personality of she's not Curzon, but everything else, I mean, was just thumbs down. I mean, the science side of the story was so hand-wavy.
Yeah.
The Arjun side of it was kind of like, meh. The best part was the six-legged vole.
Oh, my God. Well, it's hard for me to disagree with that. I was really happy to see more of Dax, right? More of Jadzia.
Yes.
And she's such an interesting character and could be more interesting if they developed her properly and didn't spend all their time having her do those stupid things like defending the Ferengi. Because, you know, haha, if you just laugh at them, you'll see how great they are, how much fun it is to be discriminated against and abused and harassed. That's
treated
fun.
Poorly.
So I was happy, you know, to have a little bit more of her, but it definitely didn't live up to what I had hoped it would live up to. And even with the title of playing God, it took me a while to realize, oh, that was about the proto-universe. That wasn't, that wasn't about the other story. But it just, yeah, it just could have been more.
Yeah.
Sisko did show a little bit of leadership in telling her she had to have the difficult conversation. You're right. But because he's never shown the proper leadership with her or any women in the past, the men around him are also not defending them and sticking up for them. And
yeah,
that's
just an interesting point.
Unforgivable. I mean, it's a TV show. I get it. But in real life, people do what the leader does. They follow the head of the snake. And the more venomous the snake, the more venomous the rest of it.
So in some ways, it's quite remarkable that Sisko, having such a poor mentor, has ended up a very positive leader.
But if you pulled in what he said about Curzon being abusive in his own charming way.
Oh, he was making excuses for poor behavior.
He was making excuses for the bad behavior.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's still going to have an impact on you. So he was still, you know, protecting that person because he was his friend or his mentor.
Yeah.
So it still has an impact on you. So maybe if we were really going to analyze, we don't have enough info because we only have a 46-minute show, but if we were really going to analyze how come he never made any effort to stop the harassment of women on the station, look at who his mentor is. Sure, he doesn't do it, but he had this mentor who that was the norm.
Right.
So maybe it did impact him.
Well, yeah, when he was sober. Yeah.
Well, I think in summary, we don't have enough info to go on with this. And that's part of the problem with the episode. I really wanted to give it a thumbs up because it was a Dax episode and we just don't get enough of them. But it's a dud.
Yeah.
We need to get better. I have to say, this season has been a slog. I'm waiting for something good. And I keep being reassured that we're almost to good ones.
Yes. This is my lasting memory of season 2.
That it's not memorable? That's your lasting memory?
Exactly. It's episodes that I never watched more than once. You know, if it wasn't for the podcast, would probably never watch again.
So, okay. Well, this is my only sample size, right? The things that I've seen. I don't know the stuff that comes later that people keep reassuring me is so much better and so great, because this is kind of terrible. I hate to say that. I'm probably going to get more letters saying, why do you hate Deep Space Nine? It's just like, well, if you listen to the podcast, I guess you know. I don't like these things. But there have been plenty of episodes I have liked very much. It's just there's been so many in this season that are just a drag. And there were so many in season one that were actually negative and I really didn't like.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to some improvements, especially since the pandemic is also a drag. I need something better. This needs to go the right direction.
Well, this was the problem with the show, even back in the day, which was it was up and down a lot. And it was very much a slow build. And if you remember, to improve the ratings, they even brought Worf on.
I don't remember. I never saw it with Worf.
Ah, okay.
I've never seen any of these episodes. I stopped in season one, as I stated in the beginning of the podcast. I've never seen any of these. There's a single episode that I have seen that comes later, and that's the one where they go to the original series universe for the Tribbles. And I watched that. But I didn't know it was happening. I didn't know anything that had happened around it, because I never watched it, and I never watched it again. So.
Well, Deep Space Nine was one of the shows at the time, one of the few shows at the time that I actually really liked.
Right.
And I was prepared to struggle through it.
You were a bitter ender.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's very few shows that I haven't struggled through, Enterprise being one of the exceptions.
That's true. That's true. Although you made it farther in Enterprise than I did.
Yes, I did.
So, two thumbs down.
Basically, yes.
Well, then that wraps us up for Season 2, Episode 17. Come back next week for Episode 18. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.
I currently have a cat butt in my face, which is not the ideal way to podcast.